Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a chance, do me a huge favor, check us out at consumerguide.com. While you're there, check out our 2023 Best Buy list, soon to be our 2024 Best Buy list. The list is an excellent starting place if you're looking for a new car or truck. Plus, and this is super cool, you can stream back episodes of the podcast right there on our homepage. All right, she is managing editor of Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk. She is a North American Car of the Year juror, and how am I forgetting this? It's like I'm stuttering because I can't remember what you are.
I'm a lot of things.
Yep.
I am a lot of things.
And her freelance work can be found all over the internet. She's Jill Simonillo.
Hi.
With two L's.
With two L's and two L's and lots of I's.
So a lot of stuff going on.
There is a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah, I misread an email, but we got a nice honor.
Yes.
Yeah, we were nominees for Best Podcast in the News and Politics division of the People's Choice Podcast Awards.
So why did you miss, like, how, what was the misread?
Because I'm getting a trophy. We're getting a trophy.
I see how you are.
I had to record an acceptance speech.
Uh-huh.
We did make the top 10.
Right.
So we did make, but we did not win the category.
Got it.
So that's that story.
But we're getting a trophy.
Also, I didn't know about this, and we got enough votes. So if you voted for us, thank you. That's very nice.
We appreciate that. Yeah.
So very cool. Some quality apparently sneaking through. I don't remember doing any good work, but...
Well, I did all the hard work, so
probably.
Probably.
Today Team you sent effort. Like 30 emails to schedule future guests, so that's work.
That is a little work.
Anyway, I was thinking, this is good publicity, mm-hmm. right, for the show, right?
Yes.
Getting close to winning awards is nice, like being nominated for an Academy Award. But I wanted to ask you some quick questions about future promotions.
Okay.
Just real quick questions.
Okay.
This will be quick. Jill, have you ever committed a crime so egregious that it might merit a televised trial?
No.
Darn.
I know, sorry.
Are you currently having an affair with Taylor Swift, Keith Richards, or Carrot Top?
I refuse to comment. I can neither confirm nor deny.
So maybe.
Maybe.
I can work with that.
Okay.
Yeah, and have you ever been detained for any period of time in North Korea?
I can neither confirm nor deny that either.
Okay, those last two things, maybe we can get some PR
maybe.
Out of that.
Maybe we can get some PR. Maybe. And I'm just saying, Tay-Tay and I, we're like totally close. Yeah. Just going to put that out there.
You're tight.
Yeah.
You're tight.
Yeah. I was actually at the Kansas City game with her, but they just didn't put the
Tay-Tay?
Camera on me. Yeah.
I've never heard Tay-Tay.
Ugh. See? You're clearly not in the inner circle.
My whole life is in ruins because Taylor Swift draws crowds almost as big as the Rolling Stones.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't be.
Says you.
Also, the Rolling Stones may not be for much longer. Does she take over? Is like...
Maybe.
That's not good.
Maybe.
That's not good. Later in the show...
Yes.
Our good friend Robbie DeGraff...
Yes.
...of Auto Pacific is here to talk about the FADS study. That's the Future Attribute Demand Study. So they asked a lot of people... If I read this right, 1,700 people, what they wanted on their cars.
Okay.
He's got a list of the 10 things people want most.
Okay.
Surprising list. Weird stuff.
Weird stuff.
People want to hear that.
I feel like there were a couple things that I want that were not on that list.
What would you want?
Well, we'll get to it.
Well, name one thing.
Heated steering wheel.
Wasn't that on the list?
I don't think it was on the list.
Oh.
Unless I was looking at a different study, which very well could be because... I'm crazed these days.
You know me well.
Yes.
I wear shorts year-round. I don't wear jackets. I'm not into outerwear, but I do like a heated steering wheel.
Yeah.
Cold steering wheels suck.
Yeah. Well, heated steering wheel, and you know what my new innovation is? This is my million-dollar idea, and nobody's allowed to steal it, because, this is a private conversation here between the two of us.
Yeah.
A heated gear shift knob.
Kind of the same deal, and it seems like they could do it.
Yeah, especially like with a manual transmission, when they put those stupid little metal rings on them, like that either burn your hand in the summer or like it's so cold you can't use it in the winter. So just like heated and cooled. It needs to be heated and cooled.
I don't know how necessary cooled is.
Well, because again, the metal ring burns your hand.
I guess.
It does.
When I was young, much younger, 18, mm-hmm. 17, something like when I worked at a gas station.
Okay, that was really young.
Yeah, it was, yeah. I was in high school and college.
I don't know that anybody works at gas stations anymore.
Well, it was a service station, I should say. So it was even crazier, because those don't exist anymore. Mm-hmm. We had three service bays.
Okay.
We made more money on service than on gas. But I had to pull in a Chevrolet Monza.
Okay.
It was a Monza hatchback, good-looking car, but they were really crappy.
Okay.
I mean, the build quality was terrible. And to go into reverse, it was a four-speed manual. To go into reverse, you had to pull up a ring.
Okay, yep.
With your two interior fingers, pull up a ring and then slide it over and then shove it up.
Yep.
So kind of the same pattern you might see in most cars.
Yeah.
But the ring part.
I've seen the rings in other vehicles.
Yeah, but not like this ring because it was a crappy GM ring from the 70s.
Got it.
I pull up the ring and I sliced open my finger. Like my finger, the skin of my finger got caught in the ring. As I pulled it up, I ripped the skin off my finger.
Ow.
That's quality control 70s style.
Yeah, well, hopefully you had your tetanus shot and were up to date on that.
Would have been this hand. It looks okay now, right?
Oh, yeah. I think you have a finger there.
40 years later, this looks okay.
You still have a finger there. That is good.
We have a review that I've been trying to get to for a long time. We just kept bumping it.
Yes. So we're going to start there.
We are going to start there. I have the Monroney in my hand, and I wanted to talk about this car for a couple of reasons. It's the Jeep Grand Cherokee L Altitude 4x4.
Yes.
You and I both drove the exact same car.
We did.
Here's the interesting thing. The Grand Cherokee, by far Jeep's best-selling vehicle.
Yes.
Almost 250,000 units of things that are really expensive. And that's why I wanted to talk a little bit about this thing. It's super important to Jeep, and most of the trim levels are very expensive. But we drove this second from the bottom.
Yep.
The second least expensive version of this car, but with the third row and with all-wheel drive, four-wheel drive.
Yes.
And it came in at $54,000.
Yeah.
That is shockingly affordable for a Grand Cherokee.
Yeah. Well, you know, and for the Grand Cherokee L, which adds a little length, extra cargo space, and
better ride, I would add.
Yeah, I would
just
say better
the
ride.
Added wheelbase kind of.
It is a surprisingly nice vehicle. I actually.
That's where I was going with this.
Yes, it's surprisingly
nice.
For
your bargain money, and I realize 50 grand ain't bargain money.
No. But the average transaction price of a vehicle these days is about $49,000.
What the hell? Yes.
I know. So consider that when we say bargain money for a well-equipped three-row vehicle with some actual usable cargo space.
Yeah, and there's a package on here. And I don't know if you can actually find one without this package. But the customer preferred package, which goes a long way from making it look nice, because it brings with it that nice leather or that fake leather suede interior.
Right.
Really classy. The package is $5,100. You take the $5,100 package off of there if you can do it.
Yeah.
This is under 50 grand.
Yep.
For a very nice crossover. But a lot of stuff going on here. The standard V6 engine. Eight-speed automatic, very smooth. I did not get killer mileage. I got something like 17 miles per gallon.
And I got something less than that.
Yeah. So, but this is a heavy all-wheel drive vehicle.
It is.
I would have liked to have seen more.
Yeah.
But I fit in it really well. So lots of if I fit in it, everyone fits in it.
And if I fit in it, everyone fits in it. Like from Jill to Tom, we need to have a Jill to Tom scale is what we need to do.
Yeah. Well, we lost Damon because Damon,
true.
Whatever, he's 6'5".
Yeah.
6'5". And you're about a yard, right?
Yeah. I'm about 5 feet tall. I round up. But you know what I really like about Jeep vehicles and, you know, including this one? In the rear cargo area, they have the button to put the rear hatch down is on the sidewall of the cargo area, not on the deck lid or the trunk hatch. Because I find often, especially in these large three-row vehicles, they put them on, you know, the lip of the hatch, and I can't reach them. And I'm playing this, like, jump game, and I can't reach it. And so this way, like, when they put it on the inside, it's just very easy to reach.
Yeah, right inside at arm height.
Like on the left side.
Yeah, that is a cool place. Funny thing, too, in a lot of vehicles, especially more expensive vehicles, you have the button up on the hatch to close it, and then one of them is close and lock.
Yes.
And I can never commit to close and lock because I'm about to press it, and I'm like, where's the key fob?
Exactly. Exactly. Or, where's the key fob?
And I have once in my automotive career locked myself out of a car. It was a Buick LaCrosse. But I still had the trunk open.
Yeah.
So I sent my daughter, who was young at the time, through the ski pass.
Yeah.
Between the rear seats.
I locked myself out of a vehicle on a drive program once.
Oh.
And I want to say it was a Ford Explorer, and I had, shut and locked. And this is probably, 15 years ago. It's a long time ago.
So the shame is washed away.
So the shame is washed away. You know what? I have no shame. It's fine. But I'd shut the door, and I locked it before I shut it. And then I was like, oh, shit. You know, you get that sinking feeling.
Now I have to
feeling.
Click the button.
It was in a time when, right when they were making the transition from like key fobs to keys to, yeah. And so like
there
very
was a
often,
lot of awkwardness there.
You would hit the lock on the door before you shut it so that you wouldn't have to like put your key in the door to lock it. And it just was right. That was more tech forward than I was at that point.
About keyless entry systems.
Uh-huh.
Why for God's sakes does no Mercedes system open the rear doors? You're spending $7 trillion for a car. And
there should be passive entry on the
rear
doors.
Yeah,
as well.
You should be able to, but it doesn't work. You have to open the front one first, and then come back and open it. Maybe that's the safety thing, the perceived safety thing. So Grand Cherokee Altitude. The thing I want to get to here, there's like 9 trim levels.
Mm-hmm.
Are you ready for? Do you know all these? Laredo, Laredo X, Altitude, Altitude X, Limited, Overland Summit, and Summit Reserve. And then, the plug-in hybrids.
Yes.
Different trim levels.
Yes.
And way more money.
Yes. Like so, pay an extra, $10,000?
Yeah, that's their 4xe system. And the cheapest one is $62,000. $19,000 more than the cheapest non-hybrid. And there is an Overland. So that's the only model that carries over. And that one's $73,000. This is why we think that these are expensive.
No, because they are when you go into the upper trims.
But the thing to do, if a dealer stocks it or if you can order it, consider a less expensive version because they're very nice. They come off still as premium.
Yep.
I just wrote a review, and my point was you still get that kind of premium feel because the Jeep Grand Cherokee plays in a very weird space.
Yeah.
It's expensive compared to mainstream cars, a little bit affordable compared to premium cars, but it's the Jeep brand, and does the Jeep play up there? But when you're paying $50,000, you don't ask the hard questions. When you're paying $63,000, you start to ask some hard questions.
Yep.
So I like the car a lot.
I like the car a lot, too.
Cool. What'd you drive here in?
What did I drive here in? I drove here in the Chevy Colorado ZR2 in a lovely, lovely chartreuse shade. Lovely.
Wait, do you like it? You don't like it?
It is very in your face.
I can't tell if you're being sarcastic.
Well, you know, I do that on purpose.
Yeah.
It's growing on me. I kind of like the obnoxious color because it's actually an obnoxious vehicle. But it's funny because people are like, oh, what are you driving this week? And I'm like, look out the window and find the most obnoxious vehicle in the parking lot, and that would be it.
People at the health club come up to me and I'm like, are you driving the? And I'm like, yes. Because sometimes it's the most obnoxious car.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's just the cleanest.
Right, right, right. Well, you know, it's funny. So I live in Chicago, and I park on an alley. And there's a couple of guys who are like maybe 4 doors down and on the other side of the alley that are always like working on cars in the garage or kind of like in the alleyway. And every time I pull into my garage, they all step out of the garage and watch me. And I'm just waiting for one of them to come down and ask me what I do. They haven't yet.
Yeah, people just assume I work for a dealership.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what people assume because like the Chevy Colorado ZR2 is very large. It's not something I would put something like myself in, necessarily.
Speaking of the Colorado,
yep.
The Midwest Automotive Media Association hosted an event last week that you were not there. You mm-hmm. were there for one of two interesting events that week. But at the drive event, I drove GMC Canyon
mm-hmm.
AT4.
Yep.
Similar to what you're driving, but not as beefed up. There's an AT4X.
Yep.
But still doesn't get you all the all-wheel drive hardware.
Right.
But I really liked it.
Yeah.
The new 2.7 liter, it's the only engine mm-hmm. now, is a 4-cylinder 2.7 liter turbo, which they say is a truck engine, but it's the same one that Cadillac uses. Make your own decisions.
And it has 3 different tunes.
For Chevy.
Yes.
Just
the,
one.
Right, for GMC it just has one.
Yeah,
and it's
the
like
middle
the top
one.
Is it the middle? I thought it was the high output, the top level one.
It was 210 and some enormous amount of 310. Horsepower and some enormous amount of torque.
I think that's the top.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's very nice.
I mean, it's a good powertrain.
Little big 4-cylinder quake at idle.
Yeah.
But that's a whatever.
Yeah, and it has the auto stop start on it, which I'm not a fan of, and I always forget to turn it off until the engine shuts off the first time, and then I'm like, dang it!
I want to say that worked pretty well in this case. I'm going to go completely off topic. I made an important discovery.
Okay.
Subaru.
Yes.
Not known for quality stop-start systems.
No.
In fact, they're bad.
Yeah.
I learned something interesting.
Okay.
The 2-liter engine, which mm-hmm. is, I think, only in the Impreza and the Crosstrek,
mm-hmm.
very smooth stop-start.
Interesting.
The 2.5, the bigger engine, not so smooth.
Yeah.
And that 2.4 turbo that they use in a lot of applications, also not so smooth.
Yeah.
So there you have it.
Well, so speaking of Subaru,
I
drove the Crosstrek Wilderness last week.
Which, that's brand new.
It is.
The thing that makes me pause on that vehicle is I thought the Crosstrek already was sort of off-roady.
It is. But they've even made it more so. Like, I wrote a review for you. It'll appear on your website sometime this week. But they, like, you know, usually in a drive program, they give you, like, 90% driving on road, and then they'll give you, like, 10% very carefully curated off-road course to say, hey, look, this vehicle is off-roady. I would say 75% of this drive was either on dirt or gravel or some kind of unpaved surface. And then they had like a 5-minute off-road course that they designed for us that we could drive through. And I was impressed with how comfortable it is off-road. And then you take these knobby, like all-terrain tires onto the highway and it's actually pretty decent.
Yeah, that's sometimes a problem. One of the interesting things, we should talk Wilderness real quick. This is the third Wilderness right now. There's
yes.
Outback Forester.
And now Crosstrek.
And this kind of prices the mid-trim level.
No. This is the top trim.
Okay, because it's not on Forester and Outback.
Okay, yeah, because this is it comes in at about $32,000 with destination, okay. Which prices it above the limited trim.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
But
that's a little different.
Still, like it's pretty much everything is included on it. You don't really have a lot of optional packages. So, like, if you look at something like the Jeep Renegade or the Jeep Compass, you know, they have a pretty solid base price. But in order to get it equipped similarly to what the Crosstrek Wilderness is, you have to add options.
I just got out of the the Compass Trailhawk.
Okay.
$46,000.
Yep.
A lot of money for a compact crossover that isn't a luxury compact crossover.
Yep.
I've driven that thing in the slush and in the mud and off-road. It's very, very good.
Yep.
If it says Trailhawk, Jeep's not screwing around, right? It's really good, but that's a ton of money.
It is a ton of money.
So, but the Crosstrek, one of their, I think it's Subaru's best-selling vehicle. No, Outback is.
Yeah, but Crosstrek is close, and this has the 2.5 liter engine. I'll be honest with you, we shut the stop-start off at every opportunity.
Uh-huh. And it defaults on,
right? It does.
I think that's for EPA stuff. It has to default on.
It is. It
so
does.
You do have to manually shut off stop-start if it bugs you.
Yeah, but they've put it on a little menu bar at the bottom, so you don't have to page through screens. Like previously, I feel like in the Outback, originally when they redesigned it and they had the new infotainment screen, you had to like page, then you had to turn it off time.
That's not good because Subaru's stop start is so bad.
Yeah.
It should be right there on the console.
So now it is. And so they've made it very easy to just turn it on and off if you like.
I try very hard to not be me and just try to be like a consumer and live with it. So many of them are good now.
I still don't like it. I don't think they're good. So my problem with auto stop start is like living in the city very often, like you're on a side street and you need to turn onto a busy 4-lane whatever. And like you're stopped, the engine is off and the traffic should be going 30 miles an hour, but it's actually going 45 miles an hour. And you need to, you know, make that left turn across traffic and you have a small window and it's just enough of a hesitation to cause me heart palpitations. And I'm a pretty aggressive driver, and I'm pretty solid, but like it always, you know, if I don't like lift my foot on the brake to turn the engine back on before I make my maneuver, like I've almost been hit several times.
The it should be more sensitive than that. The earliest days of hybrid vehicles, there was a Chevy Silverado called the Hybrid that was not a hybrid.
It was a mild hybrid.
Yeah, a 1500 hybrid. And what it really had was stop-start and then a generator in the in the pickup bed. And the thing about that was the stop-start system, which was pioneering at the time.
Right.
So kudos to them for the technology, was very bad.
Yeah.
And it didn't work. The engine didn't restart. It was very aggressive in shutting off. And the engine didn't restart until you depressed the gas. All systems now start the engine when you lift off the brake. So that by the time you hit the throttle, there shouldn't be a delay. That system was terrible in the Chevy. But they lived and learned. Also, the stop-start was really bad, which was weird because it came only with the 5.3-liter V8, which was super slick.
Yeah.
It's a great engine.
Yeah.
It's a great engine. All right. I think we burned through some first segment time here.
Okay.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Robbie DeGraff of Auto Pacific. Stick around.
questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am indeed Tom Appel. Thank you for sticking around today. I'm here with Jill Simonello. You're what?
Here.
Okay. I expected some lengthy list of credentials.
Well, you know, I figure I should stand for myself.
And her internet, freelance work can be found all over the internet.
They can.
Yep.
They can. Including on your website.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes.
That's true. Just real quick, I'm on Twitter. Lots of fun stuff. Follow me and look for the Car Spotter hashtag. If I find something cool or weird or old or strange, I like to post pictures of it and use the hashtag. Also, I will whine about features on cars that irritate me. And features on cars, good topic.
Yes, good topic.
With us on the phone is Robbie DeGraff of Auto Pacific. Robbie, how are you today?
I'm good, Tom. It was, it's hard to hold my laughter back when I hear you talk. You're always hilarious just talking about your rants of features. So it was hard to keep hush during the intro. But yeah, thanks for having me back on. I'm really happy to be here again.
Robbie, tell us about Auto Pacific and what you do there.
Absolutely. So I am a product and consumer insights analyst. Auto Pacific is a market research and product consulting firm. We've been around for probably about 30 years or so now, and we work with product planning teams and marketing teams at pretty much all major automakers, as well as a bunch of tier one and tier two suppliers. So we do research work and field studies and focus groups and competitive intelligence to essentially collectively figure out how to make the vehicles that are on sale today even better, as well as like trying to figure out how to make their vehicles that are going to be on sale in a couple of years the best they can be. So it's pretty fun. It's definitely a great job to be a nerd about.
It actually sounds like you have my dream job. That sounds like like 20 years ago, that might have been something I really wanted to do.
But not now?
Well, I'm old now. I don't want to change lanes. But I was in market research before I was in cars. So
fair.
I did a lot of automotive market research way back when. So, Robbie, you guys just completed a study, the FAD study, the Future Attribute Demand Study. Tell us about that and what you guys found.
Yeah, so every year we do our FAD study, and it's a full comprehensive study where we pull thousands and thousands of new vehicle intenders across the country. So these are consumers that are planning on buying a vehicle within the next 1 to 3 years. It's a full look at, you know, what type of brands they would consider, different vehicle segments, powertrain considerations and intentions. We're able to tell what price point they're trying to buy their next vehicle at. But the other really interesting thing about it is that it's our chance to kind of see like which vehicle features are wanted the most, which ones are not. And it also serves as a really great test bed for product planning teams at automakers who might be coming out with a feature in a couple of years, just to kind of slowly introduce it into the study and just see if it's actually worth pursuing or not. So it's kind of a cool like a test ground, I guess you could call it, for features that are coming down the line.
There's an old saying that if we ask drivers what they'd want, they'd still want horses. So to a great extent, what you're doing is you're presenting possible future attributes to customers that they may not yet know they want.
Mm-hmm, correct. And we're able to actually, what's really neat about it is when we look at our data, so this year alone, we surveyed over 11,700
wow.
consumers from all markets, all age groups, all demographics. And what's really interesting about the study is like once you really dive into the granular data, you can see, okay, there is for example, 35% of consumers want power sliding doors on their next vehicle. What other features do they want? You know, so it's really interesting because it kind of allows you almost to essentially like design a package of like ideal equipment, which is really beneficial for the product planning teams.
So I'm looking at the list here and I'm surprised by the top thing. And we've got a list here of the 10 most desirable features. Maybe you can walk us through this list. And also there's a dollar amount included. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, so when we pull the consumers to figure out what types of features they want on their next vehicle, this year we measured demand for 145 vehicle features, and that includes everything from like autonomous driving features to something as little as adjustable thigh support for your driver's seat. And every feature a consumer gets a chance to look at, they see kind of like a sample photo of the feature, a description of the feature and like what it does or accomplishes. But then we also kind of give like an idea of like how much a consumer might pay a little bit more for if they want that feature.
Interesting. Okay.
And we get that price number by essentially looking at feature or that exact same feature that's on sale across a bunch of different models, and we kind of just like take the average of it, if that makes sense. So our as interesting as it sounds, our number one most wanted feature in our 2023 FAD study was LED fog lights, and that's wanted by 48% of all new vehicle shoppers.
I'm so surprised by this.
Mm-hmm.
And do we know it's because they think LED headlights, like fog lights, look badass, or because they think they're benefiting from them somehow?
I think it's really a mix of both. I mean, I personally love fog lamps. I use them
sure.
all the time in the weather when the weather goes south. But you know, we're starting to see automakers, especially with EVs, where you can kind of get a little bit more flexible when it comes to like designing the fascias of a vehicle, and not to mention, you know, a lot of fog lamps these days, you know, you don't have to use like the halogen bulbs anymore. It's really not super expensive to put like cool LED strips, you know, in different corners of the bumpers and make them look a little bit more elaborate than, you know, your standard fog lamp 10 years ago.
LED used to be so expensive.
It did. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but I remember just years ago, you look at, you know, LED or HID headlamps versus just regular halogens, and there was like a pretty penny premium you'd have to pay on it.
Yeah.
But thankfully that technology is getting cheaper now, and you know, we're starting to see everything from compact sedans all the way up to like exotic sports cars offer some of these like LED fog lights. So I think it's like consumers want to, you know, they want to stand out because it's like a nice little pop of lighting on the front. But then I do think they actually offer a pretty good benefit, like, you know, if you're driving in the snow or in the rain at night.
Yeah. Okay, so number two makes sense, wireless charging for electronic devices.
Kind of makes sense. I need to issue a caveat here.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
Wireless charging that works well and doesn't overheat your phone.
This is a Jill problem.
Mm-hmm. No. This is a problem with every automaker except for General Motors that I have
found
phone. So far.
Your cursed phone.
No.
I don't have this problem.
Not my cursed phone. I like use wireless, but so like I drive to and from my parents' house, which like every other weekend, which is like a you know 3-hour drive.
Uh-huh.
I put my phone in the charger for 3 hours. The only vehicles that I have not had my phone overheat and shut down the system is like in General Motors vehicles. That's
this,
it.
This has never happened to me.
You for a 3-hour drive, you've never had your phone overheat.
No.
I'm calling BS on that.
It hasn't.
I think this is an interesting. This is an interesting feature because I do 100% see what Jill is saying. So I think that wireless device charging pads, you know, for like a smartphone that you'd find in the center console or like tucked away in a glove box, or not a glove box, but in a storage bin in the center. I think this is definitely one of those features that it seems really, really great. Like, you know, when you first see it or you read about it, or
sure.
if you're a passenger in your in a vehicle and you're like, oh, I don't have to bring a, you know, a clunky, clumsy charging cord. So I think this is like one of those features where it's like, oh my gosh, like I just saw that. I saw my friend or my family member using it. I want it in my car. But I do think that there needs to be quite a bit of improvement made to some of these wireless charging devices because, yeah, I mean, I've had issues. I mean, again, I have a Samsung Galaxy that's a year or two old, but like, it's very, very rare to find a wireless charging pad in vehicles that not only charges like quickly. In fact, I usually
quickly is a huge issue. It's so slow.
Yeah. And I mean, I guess you could also argue that like a wireless charging pad isn't meant to, you know, fully recharge your phone all the way to like 200% battery during your commute. But I think it's more of like a, you know, if you're streaming content, if you're listening to a podcast or music and you're just running that phone power to get that content into the infotainment
system. It's a maintenance thing.
It kind of,
I don't want to lose power.
Yeah.
We talked about the Jeep Grand Cherokee L in the first segment, and I feel like it was this vehicle that I was using Waze, and not only did my phone heat up, it didn't shut down the system, but even though I had it in the wireless charger, like I started with 20% battery life and like got home after 3 hours, like with 3% battery life. It did not charge my phone in addition to heating
again,
it up.
Again, I think this is a Jill problem.
It is not a Jill problem.
Yeah.
Robbie concurs.
I think that it's, I mean, I really do think it's a great feature. I mean, we're starting to see more demand from, you know, consumers just wanting to cut the cord in as many ways as possible. But I do think if an automaker is going to put a wireless charging pad for a smartphone in a vehicle, it needs to be like ventilated to some extent. Also, it needs to charge quickly, but I think it also needs to be in a place in the vehicle that, you know, you're not going to be constantly picking it up and texting while driving, or if it's, you know, sliding around if you're taking a turn.
Also, I think what happened, too, was in the previous generation, a lot of cars were updated. They were freshened, and manufacturers snuck these devices, the charging pads, into them, and there wasn't really a good place architecturally for them.
Yeah.
It's when a car is fully redesigned that they can make appropriate space. Because I can't tell you how many vehicles I get into, I put my car down on the charge pad, it starts to charge, and as I drive, it slides off the ideal position and isn't charging.
Toyota Sequoia and Toyota Tundra, both of which were redesigned.
Yes, those specifically.
Those were redesigned, and they put the wireless charging pad in, and they are horrible.
You rest them at an angle in the console.
It's like, what the hell?
All right. Robbie, you've probably talked enough about charging.
Sorry. Personal pet peeve of mine.
Before we talk to you, Jill and I were talking about the third thing on your list, and it's fascinating. Unresponsive driver stop assist. Tell us about that and why people want it.
Yeah, so this is a feature that is pretty new. Volkswagen products are kind of the launch, you know, avenue for this feature. So essentially, what unresponsive driver stop assist will do is, you know, using sensors in the wheel, it's kind of like imagine like a drowsy driver detection. But essentially, this is if you're driving down the road and it detects that you're swerving a little bit, or maybe you're a little bit sluggish on the gas and the brake. Or if the vehicle has, you know, an interior camera that's facing you and it catches you nodding off. And that could be whether it be you're falling asleep at the wheel, or maybe you're having some type of medical emergency. But the vehicle's system will detect that, and it'll try to wake you up. And that could be as simple as like a quick nudge of the steering wheel. Other vehicles also do it where it'll kind of tap the brake just to get you to nod forward and wake up, if that makes sense. And then if after, I think it's like after like one or two tries, if it still does not detect any intervention or moment or motion from the driver in the wheel or in the pedals, it'll bring the car safely to a halt and put on the emergency flashers. And in some cases, it'll actually bring the vehicle over to the side of the road on the curb, put on the flashers, and then I think there are a couple of Volkswagen products, and this is a big thing in Europe right now. I think we're slowly starting to get it here in the U.S., but essentially if it detects that you've passed out from a medical emergency, it'll get the vehicle off the road safely and then call for help.
I was actually not aware that this feature existed. So Volkswagen's got level 3 autonomy going in Europe? That's news to me.
They have. It's. I wouldn't say it's level 3 per se. It's still like more of like a level 2 system.
Okay.
But... yeah, it's part of their, I don't remember the name off the top of my head of the actual safety system, but it's been on some of the European models for a while, and I think we're slowly starting to get it here in the U.S. And just one really interesting thing about this, so like we found that 43% of all new vehicle shoppers want this feature, which makes it actually the top most wanted safety feature in our study this year.
At a fairly high price.
So yeah, you're looking at about $500, but I mean, I think if you as a driver have, you know, potential medical problems, or if there's someone in your family that uses a vehicle that might, I think it's a really nice, extra bit of insurance.
Yeah.
And the last thing I'll say that's pretty interesting about this is that when we break down that data and demand by age groups, typically in our research that we've done, older consumers tend to not really be into some of these ADAS features, some of these, like, you know, advanced hands-off, you know, let the car, you know, do its own thing.
Right, the hands-free driving.
But, exactly. There's not a lot of demand for various types of ADAS and level 2 and level 3 autonomy systems among older consumers. But older consumers were the most interested in unresponsive driver stop assist more than younger consumers. Yeah, so it's kind of neat to see that turn right there.
Well, and I feel like I've seen something similar to this also on Nissan vehicles with ProPilot Assist because they have the hands-on and hands-off system. But with the hands-on system, if it tells you to put your hands on the steering wheel and you don't, it'll eventually like put your blinkers on and bring the vehicle to a stop.
Yeah.
So
it's a very similar type of program.
Not as forward-thinking as the Volkswagen one, but more of a basic system.
Well, Robbie, we wanted to talk to you about one more thing. We're running out of time here, but tell us how people can see this whole list.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you go on our website, which is autopacific.com, we have a tab at the top called Insights, and you can read the whole list as well as other information from some of the research that we've done recently.
Cool. Excellent. We will link to that as well. So, Robbie, you had an opportunity. I'm very jealous. You have driven the Fisker Ocean.
I have.
Tell us what that is and what you thought of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So Fisker, and I know we've discussed this on the show a little bit, but Fisker is essentially Henrik Fisker is revamping his legacy with I'm kind of calling it Fisker 2.0. So we're looking at a couple new EVs coming out. There's the Ocean crossover. There's a smaller one coming out called the Pear, which is going to be I believe in the $30,000 to $40,000 range, and then you've got a pickup truck and another Halo type sports car coming out after that. But the Ocean is their first product, and it is a all electric crossover. It's currently being delivered to customers around the country as we speak. They actually just started doing some of their first deliveries, I believe, a week or so ago. It's built by Magna, who also builds, for example, like the Mercedes G-Wagon in Austria. And that's kind of been a benefit to Fisker. You know, he hasn't had to try and find build a factory of his own yet. And he hasn't had to like go searching far and wide trying to find someone to build it. He was able to team up with a very, very well run, reputable outsourcing company that'll build these vehicles. So last week, Fisker, in a bid to try and, you know, build brand awareness, get people into some of these vehicles, they started doing pop-up events around the country. So I went one into Chicago last Thursday night, and it was really neat. At Auto Pacific, we've been tracking Fisker for years now, and it was really, really cool to finally be able to see the Ocean up close, get behind the wheel of it, and kind of go inside and play around with all the features of it. I went in incognito mode, I would call it. So I pretended like I was a consumer rather than an analyst, just to get the full experience.
But you were stealthy.
I was stealthy, correct. but yeah, it was really interesting. It was sizing wise, I would say it definitely feels a lot more like a Nissan Ariya. Okay. Sizing-wise, which is a fantastic EV. I love the Ariya.
We agree.
And, yeah, it's very, very good. And performance-wise, the one I drove, so right now they're delivering the Fisker Ocean One, which is kind of like their launch edition, as well as the Extreme. And they're both about the same price. I believe the Ocean One just has a little bit more unique styling stuff on it. It is insanely quick. I mean, we're talking about 470 horsepower or about, which goes up to 570 with a boost mode. So I was genuinely shocked by how quick it was, but I think it was a pre-production because there were a couple issues with some of the traction control not doing its thing a little bit of wheel slip. But I think what struck me the most interesting about the Ocean was that even in pre-production form, the interior was very, very cool. It was incredibly spacious. You have a giant, giant roof that goes back. It felt like you were in a convertible sitting in the back seat. And Fisker just took a whole new approach to things. Like there's like, everything from like a floating row of HVAC controls to a center screen that spins. It's a very fresh and unique approach to an automobile. And I'm really curious to get behind the wheel of like an actual production vehicle where some of the wrinkles are ironed out a little bit and, you know, maybe some of the materials inside are a little bit nicer. But it's a very captivating product, I would say. And if you ever get a chance, or if anyone listening gets a chance to go to a pop-up and drive one, I would definitely recommend going and checking that out, because Fisker's kind of the real deal now. I'm so glad to hear that.
I'm a big fan of Henrik Fisker. I interviewed him back in 2011 or 12 when the Karma was being launched, which was his first solo automotive venture that unfortunately failed. But he's a legit designer, and people should look around online for his stuff. It's very cool, and it's just cool that he now has this venue for his really cool ideas, because he seems like he's like Elon Musk without the satanic side, and I just love to see this work.
I mean they've started delivering I think a couple hundred or a couple thousand vehicles already in the U.S. I mean I would definitely say, like, on my bracket, I've moved Fisker out of the vaporware stage into definitely, like, we're, it's slowly becoming, like, a legitimate automaker. So, yeah, it's really excited.
Which is really cool. I'm sorry, Ryan, we're running out of time, but I wanted to confirm one thing. Now, Fisker's currently building these, it's Austria with Magna, and then they're going to move that production to Foxconn, right, in Ohio sometime?
I have to triple check on that, because I know that Foxconn has run into a couple issues and potential lawsuits with other startups.
Yep.
Like
in terms of building the
exactly. Well, that's the factory where they were going to build.
I think Foxconn seems a little bit sketch, if it's just to be honest, when it comes to some of their stuff. I mean, again, remember, I'm from Wisconsin, and they promised a gigantic campus, and it's just empty. But
what's a couple of billion dollars between friends?
Right. Yeah, that's healthy for a startup to me. But no, I think if Fisker can get a U.S. plant built, hopefully not with Foxconn, they'll be able to get a lot more of these vehicles out the door quickly, including the more affordable ones, and get customers eligible for tax credits, which is probably the most important thing with buying a new EV right now.
Yeah, especially a compact crossover that isn't quite luxury. Robin, we have totally run out of time. Tell us how people can keep track of your activities in social media.
Yeah, absolutely. So I am on X, or whatever the Twitter platform is called.
That place, yeah.
At Robbie_DeGraff AP, and then you can also follow us at Auto Pacific on LinkedIn, as well as our website, autopacific.com.
Cool. Robbie, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. It was an honor. So good to talk to you both.
Good to talk to you. That was Robbie DeGraff with Auto Pacific. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, it's quiz time. Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom Appel. She is Jill Simonello. Jill, yep. You're on social media.
I am.
Social media things.
I am.
Forespace.
No, Forespace anymore.
Yelp. MySpace.
No. Like Foursquare and MySpace are. I used to. I have done, and I have been on Yelp as well.
I gave up on Yelp.
I pissed off one of the people I was trying to get to take my wedding photos, and they wouldn't return my call. So I wrote the review, and I'm like, their photos look really lovely, but I couldn't get them to return my call.
No, on Yelp now, if you go there for a review, it gives you the alternatives before you get to your review.
Mm.
You have to filter through like 10 similar restaurants.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to do that.
Yeah.
But no, I'm on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, X, Threads, Posts, all the things, at Jill Simonello, or I use the hashtag Cartajor.
Henrik Fisker should buy X.
Somebody other than what's his name should buy X.
All right. You were just gab in the last segment, so we're a little rushed for time.
Yeah, but should probably take a sip of water. Oh, Pepsi, whatever that is. That's soda.
Pepsi.
Soda, because you were gab gabbing.
Yeah.
I'm now eating a donut.
This is Car Stuff Power Quiz 188. Car color or pop sensation?
Okay.
You need to tell me. I'm going to give you a two-word phrase. You need to tell me if it is a car color or a popular song.
Define popular song, because my idea of popular is not the same.
I will as I ask the question.
Okay.
Are you ready? We should talk about how you win. Five questions plus a bonus question. You need three for a win.
Okay.
All right. Are you ready?
And I want to point out, I got 5 out of 5 last week.
Yeah, you did.
I just missed the bonus question.
Yep.
Just wanted to put that out there for you.
All right. Congratulations.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Orange Crush, Jill.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a 2024 Camaro color or a 1988 release by the band REM?
Mm.
Orange Crush.
I know it's a soda.
It is that. We are rushed for time.
Okay. Yep. I'm going to guess between my bites of donut, I'm going to guess.
Is that a good donut?
It is a good donut.
Okay.
He kept pushing donuts on me, so I finally had to give in. I'm going to say color.
No, it is an REM release. Very popular. Big hit.
Okay.
REM. Jill?
Your favorite phrase.
You have no points.
I have no points.
All right. The next one is heavy metal. Heavy metal.
Okay.
Is that a 2024 Toyota Crown Color or a 1966 release by the Kinks?
I don't know who the Kinks are.
No. You got to know.
I've heard of the Kinks, but I could not tell you anything they sing.
Oh, my.
It's before my time.
Music is never before your time.
It is before my time.
Have you heard of Bach?
Not the same.
Kind of the same.
I had to study classical music when I was in college, so I know who Bach is.
Okay. He was before your time. Heavy metal.
Okay.
Toyota Crown, released by the Kinks.
Oh, gosh. I'm getting the Toyota Crown to drive in a couple weeks.
Yeah, might be heavy metal.
It could be heavy metal. I'm gonna go with... I have no idea. I'm going to go with the Kinks.
No. No, it is a 2024 Toyota Crown Color.
Okay,
ready?
Apparently not, but go ahead.
Deacon Blues. Deacon Blues, plural. Is that a 2023 Range Rover Sport Color or a Steely Dan song?
Our producer is laughing over there. He knew what it was before you read the question.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to go with Steely Dan.
It is.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Randy.
A lot of people would have been very mad at you. Steely Dan fans are touchy.
Okay. Well, a lot of people are mad at me anyway because...
Like, I can have
I don't
how
have
popular
a good voice.
Our podcast is by admitting that I don't like Steely Dan.
Okay.
There it is. I just ruined the show.
You just ruined it.
Baby Blue.
Okay.
Baby Blue. 2023 Subaru WRX color or a 1971 release by the band Badfinger?
I don't know who Badfinger is either.
Well, Badfinger's a real band.
Never
briefly
even
produced
heard of
by
them.
George Harrison. Have you heard of George Harrison?
I have heard of George Harrison.
Because he was before your time.
He was before my time, but my dad did like the Beatles.
Okay. Baby Blue.
Ugh. WRX. See, WRX doesn't strike me as a Baby Blue kind of vehicle.
Hmm. All right.
Because it's much more like aggressive. Mm-hmm. It should have a better name than that. But they did wimp out on the WRX this year because they got rid of the manual transmission.
Yep. Yeah, the performance transmission is now the only transmission.
Yeah, so it could be Baby Blue. Because that's kind of wimpy. I'm gonna go with the song.
It is the song, yep. Great song, 1971, Badfinger. I think that song was produced by George Harrison. You have 2 points. You can save this thing.
I can save it. It's still not dead.
All right. Super Black. Is that a 2023 Nissan Kicks color or a 1970 release by Three Dog Night?
Randy's laughing again. So I'm going to go Three Dog Night.
It is not.
Oh!
It's actually a Nissan Kickstarter.
Darn.
You need the bonus question.
All right.
Luckily, it's a topic you're very familiar with.
Is it Kit Kats?
No, it's science fiction.
I'm not as familiar with science fiction.
I have a list of four movies.
Okay.
Four movies in front of me. Three of which are original cast Star Trek movies, one of which is fake. I need you to give me the fake.
Okay. I just want to say, be very glad I'm not trying to cheat because you're holding that up in the light. Yeah.
I don't know if you can get that from behind.
Okay.
Well, look at this. Now you can't.
Very good.
And for people who can't see this, which is nobody or everybody, I have folded it.
You have. But I'm just saying, be glad I wasn't trying to cheat.
All right. Bonus question. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
One of these is not a real movie.
Okay.
All right. Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier. Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country. Star Trek VII, The Phantom Menace.
Oh, I feel like Phantom Menace is a movie, but not in Star Trek.
Hmm. Weird.
You would do that.
I would.
I'm going to say that.
You're right.
Ha ha ha!
Yeah, that's Star Wars, which is wildly inferior to Star Trek. Good job. You made it on the bonus question.
I pulled it out!
All right. I am signing this on a line that says, you are a winna. Sign here.
Winna. W-I-N-N-A.
All right. We should talk a little bit about you disappearing from the studio again.
Yes. Yes, I am going to be gone for
no paycheck for you.
At least 2, maybe 3 or 4 weeks. I'm going off the grid next week with the Rebel Rally.
So that starts when?
So I'll fly out next Monday, and then the prologue day starts that Friday, and then the actual competition starts the following Saturday.
So you're definitely out for 2 weeks.
Yes.
Okay.
And then I come back, and the North American Car of the Year jury has their semifinalist drive, and so I'll be on my way to Detroit on Monday. The timing is still iffy.
So you may be out 3 weeks.
Yeah, and then after that, I'm heading to Spain to drive the Volvo EX60.
Oh.
Or EX30, sorry.
EX30, okay.
Yeah.
Like EX, what happened?
30.
Sometimes I feel out of touch, but that made me feel terribly out of touch. Like,
well,
I should know what's going on.
But yeah, so I got some stuff coming up. But the biggest thing is the Rebel Rally. And I will say, if you want to follow us, which you should, because we're driving a Hyundai Santa Cruz, me and my partner, Kristen Shaw, you can go to rebelrally.com, and that's R-E-B-E-L-L-E Rally. So not Rebel Rally, Rebel. And they have, like, you can look on the site and they'll say, you know, how to track your team. We are Team 215, and our team name is the Brute Squad. We are the Brute Squad.
Go. And if people want to know more about the Rebel Rally, we absolutely have to promote our bonus episode.
Yes.
About the Rebel Rally.
Yes.
So you can learn all about that. It's just a bonus episode of the podcast. Get that anywhere.
Yes.
And it's also on my the Consumer Guide homepage.
Yep.
All right. So, interesting. Yeah, so you'll be gone for a long time.
Yep.
And
don't miss me too much.
Yeah, I've got good guests coming up, though.
You do?
I believe I'm speaking out of turn, but I believe I have Steve and Johnny back in studio soon.
Soon.
While you're gone.
So while I'm gone.
They will play the role of guest host and guest.
Yes.
Which was pretty easy.
Yes.
And I believe our good friends from the Sons of Speed will be in as well.
Cool.
So that'll be Brendan or Paul.
Or,
either
yeah,
or.
Either or.
Either or, so that goes. Anything else going on?
There's so much going on, but I feel like we've talked too much again. Or do we still have a couple minutes?
We have like 2 minutes.
Like 2 minutes.
So this is the stretch sign.
Oh, got it. Stretch it out. Stretch it out.
You have to do something for 2 minutes.
All right. I've got, so we talked about the Jeep Grand Cherokee L. I have a video on our YouTube channel, Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, that just looks at it at night, like looks at the lights.
Oh.
Because a lot of times when you're driving a vehicle, especially in a first drive program, you don't get to drive it at night.
Right.
So what I like to do with a vehicle that maybe I've already reviewed or I've had the chance to drive, but, you know, during a drive program is I put in my garage and I check out the lights.
That vehicle, too, was good looking. It was velvet red pearl.
Yeah.
Here's the thing about lights and taillights. When I was a kid, when I was 18, pumping gas, whatever, my buddy Dave and I could identify any vehicle at any distance by the headlight and taillight signature.
Mm-hmm.
We were that quality geeks. Virtually impossible now.
Yeah.
And what's interesting, too, is you look at a taillight assembly on a car, that is not how it looks at night, thanks to LED. Incredibly different. So it's hard to do that now. And there's some cars, like a Prius Prime. You can pick that out of a crowd 6 miles away.
And I would say anything from Hyundai, you can pick out of a crowd like six ways from Sunday.
And the Escalade.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's true. Cadillac.
And the Rivian delivery van.
So basically what you just said is completely untrue.
What's that?
That you can't pick them out of a lineup anymore.
No, I picked a select few.
I think there's a lot more than a select few.
Have you seen the Rivian EDV, electric delivery van, at night?
Uh-uh.
It's a giant hoop of light. It's like on three sides of the vehicle. You cannot miss it. There's no way those cars are ever rear-ended.
Okay.
It is like the light of the sun comes on when they brake.
I think there are more vehicles that are recognizable than not. I'm gonna throw that out
there. Man, I don't know.
Throw that out there.
I'm getting old.
I'm throwing down.
I'm not keeping up, but I don't think so. In the old days, man, a cop car couldn't hide at night. You could just make out, because they were always Caprices or Dodge Diplomats
but yeah, they're usually, like in Chicago, they're Explorers or, and you go over into Indiana, the Dodge Charger.
Yeah, and that's going away now. All right, guess what we did?
We stretched out our 2 minutes.
We did, yeah, we stretched out.
We stretched it out.
I'm doing the stretch motion.
I got it.
All right.
I saw the stretch.
All right. Big thanks to Robbie DeGraff of Auto Pacific. Make sure you check that stuff out. Check us out, too, on Facebook, the Car Stuff Podcast. We're on Facebook. Links to all this stuff will be there. All right. Big thanks to...
to Did you misplace your notes?
No, I spelled your name weird. But thanks to Jill Simonello.
Thank you. And Salmonella.
And Randy Simonella. And the good folks.
Citronella.
At Talk Zone. I spelled your name wrong. That's so weird.
Thanks.
All right. And a big thank you to the Donut Producers of America for all you do.
Well, you know.
All right. Let's talk more about cars.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at consumerguide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.